Hi, it's Karen Webster for payments.com, and I'm here today with Rick Barbary, who is Group Vice President for Digital River World Payments. Rick, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Karen.
So it's always great to get caught up with you on one of our favorite topics, cross-border payments, and Digital River in particular has some really interesting insights. We, as you know, do our monthly tracker, and we look at capabilities and strengths across a spectrum of cross-border capabilities, and Digital River always does extremely well. So it's those insights that we're most interested in bringing to the surface. A couple things on my mind this month that I'm hoping you can shed some light. The first is this whole initiative within the EU to create a single digital market. And as everyone probably knows, you in particular, it would standardize rules across the EU member countries for lots of different things, I think related to mostly digital goods. But I'm curious to get your perspective on how you think this will influence cross-border sales, which is, of course, what it's intended to do. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think you're right. Initial intention doesn't appear to be around digital goods, but it would not surprise me if we see this as paving the way for, you know, further collapsing of borders around physical goods as well. So yeah, there's a ton of information right now, and it's getting just a ton of press. I think that the concept of the single digital market just makes a lot of sense. So at the end of the day, I kind of understand it to really be revolving around these three primary pillars that are backed up by about 16 different specific actions. I don't think we'll need to crawl into all of those, but really, you know, it's all about the three concepts, the three major pillars of making consumer access to digital goods much easier, leveling the playing field among merchants, and really maximizing the opportunity for e-commerce, for cross-border sales. So I think it's got a tremendous set of opportunities, but also, as you mentioned, some pretty interesting implications that we can talk about too.
So I'm curious the implications from the solutions provider perspective, because, you know, after all, a lot of what solution providers are trying to do is to make more efficient this process of cross-border commerce and cross-border payments. Does this make it more of a challenge, less of a challenge? Does it have any impact at all on the solution providers that are trying to solve for these problems as they exist today?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and the answer to that is yes, both. But I think right out of the, it's probably going to make things a little more challenging for all of us. And really, I do think that we are at the starting line. It's like we're still on the block, the gun's just gone off, and we're just starting to get ourselves on the path. You know, I think a couple of key points are that first and foremost, we're going to see a lot of change ahead of us, a real significant change ahead of us in the European market. Everything from telecom changes to cybersecurity, data privacy, compliance, rules, regulations, we're going to see a lot of change. And all of that change not necessarily completely articulated yet. So I think from a merchant's perspective and from a third-party provider's perspective, there's two key points here. One is to understand those nuances. Right? We're going to have to comply, no question about it. But also, as these rules, regulations, and changes begin to evolve, it's a tremendous opportunity for all of us to take advantage of those new regulations and new opportunities. So be aware of them for compliance reasons, but get out in front of them, because it will actually allow us as merchants and as third-party providers to start to differentiate ourselves. The second point is really it's going to be an aggressive market. So think about this as opening up commerce to 28 new markets. That's going to be a very, very aggressive land grab, and successful players are going to get out in front and optimize some of the things that we're talking about from a cross-border perspective.
So what are some of the opportunities for differentiation?
Well, I think you're going to have to know how to play in these markets. So while there will be a leveling of the playing field and a leveling of the market, from a risk and compliance and even from a fraud perspective, you're going to be servicing different markets. Nevertheless, even though some of the walls are breaking down, there's going to be different markets. As you look at understanding kind of the risk profile and the risk footprint across the market, I think as a provider, you need to take into account that the markets are leveling, not all things are equal. And I think another nuance of that is be ready to tune. So these markets all have favorite payment methods, favorite transaction types, different shopping experiences. The markets are different.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up consumers and their preferences and how that is shaping the behavior of players in the market. And that's really the next question that I had for you. So one of the things that we pointed out in the tracker this month is this finding that from the perspective of serving the Chinese consumer, which of course everyone wants to serve, they are looking outside of China to merchants in the U.S. and South Korea. So that's sort of one data point. The second data point is that from a cross-border perspective, the Asia-Pacific region for the first time surpassed the North American market as the number one global B2C e-commerce market. So Asian consumers are going somewhere else while the rest of the world is beating a path, and the Americans in particular are beating a path to the door in Asia. I find that interesting. What do you suppose is motivating all of that?
So I would agree with that. I do find that really interesting because you're talking about now a market that is continuing to emerge, and it's clearly starting to dominate from an addressable market perspective. And we've actually kind of talked a little bit about this before, the Chinese consumer shopping experience. These are the consumers who are traveling internationally more frequently. They're buying online cross-border. They're attending universities abroad. So we're seeing a lot of Chinese consumers transacting across the globe, too. But I also think you're highlighting one of the key points that we've really spent some time thinking about, and that is the fact that the world as a whole is now moving aggressively towards these cross-border solutions. So yeah, you're right. Consumers are definitely looking to Chinese and South Korea and APAC merchants. But it's not just one location, one nation. It's becoming a pretty significant trend across the marketplace as a whole.
Well, that leads me to my final question, and that is related to the actual delivery of the goods that are purchased cross-border, which of course is, you know, a massive logistical undertaking. That can be very, very costly. And it's not just shipping, but it's taxes and all of the things that go along with this cross-border commerce opportunity. But it seems like, unlike domestic commerce, that shoppers are really willing to trade off delivery time for cost. Is that also what you're discovering? And how are you helping merchants meet the expectation of consumers, which is I'd love to get it faster, but I'm not interested in paying as much as you might want me to pay?
I think you're hitting it on the head. This is clearly a situation where, and we've said it before, consumer choice will win. And I think you're articulating exactly the situation. Consumers are willing to wait for the delivery of goods and services because they've already established that they're not really excited about paying for it. And I think what we're starting to see is that trend. So consumer choice, I do think, is really the key. I do think that it's going to drive our merchant behavior. And I also believe that as merchants think about how to satisfy that, they got to back up a little bit and recognize that this is a logistical headache. And we need to create the right degree of flexibility in the merchant solution so that it's not just a one-size-fits-all.
Well, you know, the thing that I think is interesting is consumers are willing to wait, so they're willing to trade off the cost for waiting as long as there's communication as to where things stand. I think it's making the purchase from someone you really don't know, you know, in another country, and then kind of not knowing when it's going to show up or if it's ever going to show up.
Right. And we're seeing that too. And again, this is where I think merchants are really starting to adapt to that. So point number one, absolutely clear that consumers have established their preference. And their preference is shipping within 2 days and free. That's what they want. They're not getting that all the time, but that's what they want. And that's the expectation that's starting to get set. So what we're starting to see now, especially in some of these emerging countries, is more of a democratization, if you will, of the delivery process. We're moving more to Uber-like delivery capabilities, where we're starting to leverage partnerships, we're starting to leverage infrastructure that's in place to kind of help solve for that last mile. So I think our point of view is that we absolutely understand what the consumer preference is going to be. And their expectation is that merchants are going to deliver that good within a couple of days, and they're going to do it for free. And consumers, to your point, are willing to wait that out for a little bit, but I think their expectation is that they don't have to wait very long. So the concept of long delivery times, I think it's going to be a short-lived experience, and we're watching an entirely new marketplace start to emerge for the physical last-mile delivery of these goods.
Interesting. It truly is an ecosystem that is emerging to satisfy this cross-border opportunity, and it really is an interesting one to watch evolve. And I know Digital River is really in the middle of all of it, fostering the development of many of these opportunities for existing players and those who see the opportunity as well. Well, Rick, it's always great to catch up with you. Thanks so much for the benefit of your insights today, and I look forward to talking with you again.
I really look forward to talking with you again, too, and I appreciate everything that you're outlining here to help our merchants be more successful in their cross-border experiences. So thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to talk about this.
You're most welcome. Thanks, Rick.